Mike, turn your games down.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another movie episode of Games My Mom Found. I am Mike Gilbert, and who are the top men researching this movie with me tonight?
I'm top man Peter Bingham Pankratz.
I'm top man Kerry Chandler.
And I am top man Kenneth Sanity.
And we are here to celebrate 100 movie episodes of this podcast, not including the Marvel ones, so we'd be over 100 something. But
what a great choice for number 100.
I know.
That's why. Because this is one of my favorite movies of all time. This is one of the movies that I categorize as a perfect film. There's a few. A New Hope.
Yeah.
Silence of the Lambs. Raiders. Jurassic Park 1.
The Adventures of Pluto Nash.
Never seen that.
Osmosis
Jones. I saw that in the theater.
But those are ones, like, for me that I consider like a perfect movie, and this is one of them. And we are here to talk about Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Nope.
Directed by Steven Spielberg. Or is it just called Raiders of the Lost Ark?
It's just Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh.
Yeah, no Indiana Jones in the title.
I did not know that.
Didn't you see the title card, Mike?
When it came to DVD, they did add Indiana Jones and the onto the case. But the movie was released as Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, it's an episode 4 New Hope situation.
Oh, and the rest of them are the ones that have it. Like, do they all have the rest of them have? Okay, the rest of them have the title and the name, have his name in the title.
Yeah, I know for like streaming services have branded it this way. Presumably so the American public will not say, I want to watch Indiana Jones. Why am I watching this other movie that's not Indiana Jones?
Well, one thing you can say about Americans, sure are dumb sometimes.
Always overdressing for the wrong occasions.
Yep.
good way to fit in a joke.
Relevancy.
And this was directed by Steven Spielberg. Story by George Lucas. He can write sometimes. And this came out in 1981.
I'm going to say that story by George Lucas is doing some heavy lifting. He's got Lawrence Kasdan and Philip Kaufman on there also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe the story was that they came up. I think George Lucas came up with the title.
Yeah.
I think he came up with Jones. Or he came up with the name Indiana Jones. They were on a beach in Hawaii after Star Wars. And he was like, let's call it Indiana Jones.
Yeah, because his wife's dog's name is Indiana?
Right.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
The one that edited his movies.
Yeah.
I mean, but,
like, you know, Steven Spielberg and George Lucas broing out on a beach in Hawaii making sandcastles and coming up with the idea of this movie. That's like kind of the best story ever.
Yeah, yeah. Man, you should read some of their notes, though, if you haven't.
Oh, are they bad?
Oh, I mean, Marion was 13 when she and Indy got together, you know.
Oh, no.
She's supposed to be like 21 in this.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely still is in there. Thankfully, in the movie, they don't specifically say how old she was. However,
right.
Is she only, I mean, okay. I mean, it is like the 30s, but still, like.
Yeah, it's the most problematic. Well, it's probably the most problematic part.
In this movie, yeah.
In this movie.
We're only talking about this movie tonight, but yes.
Yeah, we're only talking about this movie.
Yeah, one of the most, yeah.
I never knew that because the actress looks like she's easily, like, close to the same age as him. There's nothing that gives it away that she's supposed to be much younger.
Karen Allen was 30 when this was made, and Harrison Ford is 9 years older than her, so he was 39. So,
That's fine.
They're pretty close. Yeah, they're pretty close. But no,
it doesn't matter as much anyway.
Yeah, but in the original backstory they came up with, he was, when they first got together, he was 20 and she is 13.
I can buy 13 and like 16, even then that's getting a little bit 13 and 20. Nah.
Yeah.
Indiana Jones is an archaeologist, not a pop punk musician.
And
Ken, or a rock and roll musician.
and Ken, do you want to say the plot, which I forget to do when you're not around?
Oh, absolutely. History professor and part-time grave robber Indiana Jones is working together with his hard-drinking ex-girlfriend, who's an incredible badass, and they're tracking down the Ark of the Covenant, a treasure and weapon of biblical proportions, all while trying to stay ahead of Ivan Ooze and the greatest villains known to history, the alt-right. The Nazis. Sorry.
That was perfect.
And I rewatched the movie as we're talking. Yeah, I see. I didn't realize it just says Raiders of the Lost Ark in that.
It's but okay. You're forgiven.
Well, to be fair, Disney Plus does have it, you know, set as Indiana Jones.
Yeah, well.
I mean, this Disney Plus probably claims that there's 5 Indiana Jones movies, which is ridiculous. So.
Oh, come on.
I still have yet to see Dial of Destiny, unfortunately. I wanted to.
If it's on Disney Plus, you know, if you already subscribed, you might as well.
It is on Disney Plus. I love that. That's a glowing recommendation. You might as well watch it.
I mean, hey, sure, I should.
If you want to find out what happens to Mutt Williams, you'll know.
You're paying for it either way, so you're responsible.
Right. Whether you you've already paid for it. Yes.
You've already caused it to happen with your subscription.
I'm glad there's no Mutt Williams erasure then. That's good.
I can't remember when I first saw this movie. I mean, I don't know if you introduced me to this, Peter, or like my dad did. Like, I know I watched it back when we were young.
I do remember watching it with you. I know. Yes, I do remember watching. But was it your first time? I don't know. I introduced you to the other Spielberg classic, Jurassic Park. So
yes, where I ran away and hid. Yes.
Right.
You want to know something crazy?
Sure.
So I have an Indiana Jones tattoo. I think qualifies me as an Indiana Jones fan. I think I did not see this movie till I was, I mean, all the way through anyway, till I was in my 30s.
Okay.
That's insane.
Yeah. As a kid, we had Temple of Doom taped off of HBO, off of a free weekend of HBO, you know, because we never had HBO, but we had literally at least 100 VHS tapes with 3 movies each taped off of HBO free weekends. And that was one of them. And then my grandmother had Last Crusade, which is what my tattoo is from, on VHS. And I would go to my grandma's house in the summers. I would spend the whole summer at her house every day. And I would get there in the morning and I would watch Turner and Hooch, The Quigley Down Under, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and Last Crusade. Those are my 4 movies that I would watch. And I would watch at least 2 of those per day, every day, 5 days a week, multiple summers. And eventually we got whenever the Star Wars box set with the faces came out, then I added Star Wars trilogy into it also. But I was already in like junior high when those came out. So, So I grew up from like age like 3 or 4 watching Last Crusade over and over and over again to where, I mean, I've seen it easily 50, 60 times. This movie I've seen, I mean, you know, half a dozen times
or more,
maybe more, but only really in the last 10 years. So kind of a crazy, like, it's the weird thing. It's the same thing with Ghostbusters. We had Ghostbusters 2 taped off of HBO. And then I didn't see Ghostbusters all the way through until I was in high school. Grew up watching Ghostbusters 2 since I was like, I mean, I don't know, 5. It came out when I was 5. So
that's insane to me.
This is the one I've seen the most.
It should be insane to you. Yes.
Because of Netflix and because I had all 3 on DVD when they got released on DVD in their sparkly packages. I remember I bought them all.
I've got that box set that it's 4 discs. It's the three movies and then like a 4th bonus content disc.
Yeah, I didn't buy that one. I bought the one that came out after, which is each one on its own and came in a little like slipcover case.
Yeah, this one, that's what it is. It's like mine is too. It's like a little box set.
Yeah, there were 2 different ones. The first one was the box set. Then the separate DVDs came later.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's separate DVDs. It's four separate DVDs in a box.
Okay.
But the 4th one is a bonus disc, not, it's like making of Indiana Jones disc.
I watched it then, and then I actually got lucky enough to see this in theaters, I think last year. All I remember is my wife was upset because she thought it was Temple of Doom, which is her favorite, and it wasn't Temple of Doom.
This Indiana Jones movies, I feel like a lot of the love for it has to do with whichever one is the first one you saw. Maybe that becomes your favorite one. I don't know, but that was for her.
For her, Temple of Doom is the one she watched with her dad all the time when she was young. So I feel like this is the one I must have watched with my dad because I remember that rock very vividly. And I always being like, I want to see the one with the rock in it.
Yeah, I remember this is the one everyone's very culturally aware of. Especially if you grew up in the 80s. Like, I remember the Muppet Babies and Kermit running from the rock, running from the giant boulder.
And he had the outfit and the whip and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. Yep.
Memories.
Peter,
I think everyone knows about that. Yeah, go ahead.
Peter, what is your history with this movie?
I remember seeing it on a VHS tape. I know we had, so my dad was a Laserdisc collector, and he had Laserdisc. I know I watched it on Laserdisc. I think that was the first time. But for repeated viewings, because we weren't really allowed to handle Laserdisc player of So we had a VHS copy from taped off the TV. That was the part where we watched it over and over again. So I watched it many times. Yeah. It's probably up there. This one and Last Crusade are probably equal amounts of times that I watched it when I was a kid.
All right. What about you, Ken?
I have very distinct memories watching this with my father when I was small. And then I watched Temple of Doom, and I've basically been a fan for a long time. This is not the one I've seen the most. It would actually be Temple of Doom, but just because I've seen it the most doesn't mean I like it.
No.
But yeah. This would probably be the third most that I've seen, honestly, because, you know, the GOAT Last Crusade. There and, like...
Interesting.
Yeah, it's catch me on a different day, it'll change. Like, it's constantly between these two. I'm of the opinion with Mike that this is a perfect movie.
Yeah, it really is.
I would agree. And I have to say, when I was a kid, I preferred Last Crusade. But as I got older, I'm like, I like the appeal of... Raiders appeals to me more. So there is, it can change, yeah.
One dumb joke I have to get out of the way. Not my joke, but Big Bang Theory. When they're like, Indiana Jones doesn't even need to be in this movie. He doesn't do anything. If he wasn't there, the same thing would have happened. And I remember I watched too much Big Bang Theory. I watched the whole series three times. And I was like, I went back and I watched this movie since then. And again, I'm like, you know what? I disagree because
I do.
Because had he not been there, they would have got the arc. They would have just taken it straight to Germany. You never would have had the sub incident. You never would have had him go to the island to test it. Because the reason they do that is all because of the shit he's doing.
Well, or alternatively, they would have brought it back to Germany and opened it in front of Hitler and then killed Hitler before World War II. So he may have actually caused the deaths of millions of people.
I disagree with both those. Like, because I feel like Belloc is the one who wanted to open it beforehand.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, yeah, that's fair.
100%.
But I feel like I don't agree with that stupid Big Bang Theory joke that
no.
Everything would have still happened.
Oh, no.
I don't agree with it either. It's become, go ahead.
As Big Bang Theory jokes go, it's a good one, I guess, but it doesn't hold up.
It's become, I've seen repeat on the internet and it annoys me because for many reasons, and then number one is that they were digging in the wrong place. I mean, it didn't have the whole medallion, but they didn't know the whole story anyway, so.
Right. I mean, they wouldn't have found it. Or maybe
they would have had the medallion because the idea is that had he not been there, they would have went to the bar, killed Mary, and took the medallion, then had the correct medallion.
Right. But the staff was, I don't know, they had to go to that guy with the qubits and all that stuff, too.
But also, the only reason why they know where Marion is because they follow Indiana Jones.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, no, they wouldn't have been able to, they wouldn't have found her.
Belloc makes a point of saying this when he comes and takes the idol at the beginning, is that he basically just makes his living following Indiana Jones around.
Yeah.
So without Indiana Jones, this movie wouldn't have happened. And first off, calling anything from a Big Bang Theory a joke is insulting.
Oh, boy.
No, I know. I don't know why I watched that show three times. I really got into it, but I'm good. I don't need to see it ever again now.
I liked it for a time.
My time wasn't that long ago, by the way. Like 2021 is when I watched it all the way through three times.
That's okay. It's all right.
We all did crazy things in 2020 to 20.
We did, or exactly. Yep.
Show no.
I don't know why, but so just like watching this movie, one thing I think I appreciate when movies do it, I don't know what movie started it. I know Bond does it later on in the good Bonds, where you have something that happens in your first part of the movie that connects to the second part of the next three-fourths of your movie, but still like is a standalone thing. Like in here, him going to that first tomb where he has to get the gold idol is a very standalone thing that still connects the movie.
Yeah, it's kind of a variation of a cold open, because right, a cold open has nothing to do with the rest of the movie. And this one is a cold open, but then it does. I don't know what that's, there's probably a term for that.
Yeah, it is. Well, I mean, cold open, I think that's a fair term. I mean, I feel like that's gold for TV shows, but still it applies
right.
to.
Whereas, like, I wouldn't even call this a cold open, though, because typical cold open sequences happen before the title, before the title even shows up.
Well, yeah.
And the title's running while Indiana Jones is going through the jungle. So, like,
So the thing you have to remember is that Indiana Jones was based on James Bond. So, like, Steven Spielberg wanted to do James Bond. So he was like,
right.
They wouldn't let him do one, or they, you know, he wasn't big enough. So he said, I'm going to make my own. And so he had the same formula of that first scene is, you know, is the end of another adventure. In all the movies, it's an adventure ending, and then begins the real adventure starts after that one.
Right.
Okay, I didn't even think about that. That's a great way to put it. Because I consider it more of later Bond, but...
No, it was right there, I think from Goldfinger, at least, has that first scene as, like, an unrelated adventure, and then it goes into it.
Yeah, most of them do. There's a couple that don't, I think, but yeah, generally right. They do. Like, there's a couple that, especially if you think of, everyone's favorite James Bond, Die Another Day, the opening with that one results in him going to prison in North Korea, which right. then triggers the events of the movie, so...
Yeah, it's similar, but...
But it's so, it is, yeah, it's a similar idea, though.
When you said Goldfinger, I just heard... right in my head immediately. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, they wanted... in fact, in Temple of Doom, they directly reference Goldfinger because he's wearing the white tuxedo with...
Yeah.
You know, well, that one really doesn't have much of a, like, cold open, so to speak, either. Well, that one, the beginning is... Well, it goes directly into it.
The end of the adventure is working for those Chinese mobsters.
Oh, yeah. That's what you're saying. Right. He just ended an adventure working for them.
Yeah.
Right.
And The Last Crusade has the Cross of Coronado. Thing, right. Which is an unrelated adventure. But
his lifelong quest for the Cross of Coronado.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
This one, I think it does such a good job of introducing you to the character without it knowing really anything. Just the way that whole forest is paced with the guy pulling the gun on him. Like, just everything, the way they do it is so fucking good.
Yeah. Right.
And it's really good.
One kind of, like,
whipping it out of his hand, establishing that he uses the whip, you know? Yeah.
And Alfred Molina, which later as we all know, is Doc Ock later on in Spider-Man 2. Like, I took a picture of it before we did this recording, but first, I love the scene when he's standing there and he starts like shaking it. He starts like touching his fingers and has his mouth open when he's picking up the gold orb. I just love that scene. I don't know why. I just love the way he looks.
Yeah, I never realized that was Alfred Molina until I was looking at it for this.
Yeah, I think it might be his first role.
First theatrical. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
He was young then. It's just, I don't know. Oh. It amuses me. I like him in this. I do like how the two guys that are trying to help them both end up, trying to betray him.
Right, yeah.
He's not that young. He's 29.
That's
what I'm saying for an actor. Yeah.
Yeah. But he does a good job. And I like how he gets, he gets killed pretty quickly because he gets stabbed by the trap.
Yeah. This opening is, it's when a movie comes along where every scene is basically iconic, it's really that one reason why it's a perfect film, because that opening is really good. Like everything about the pacing and, stay out of the light and, all that stuff is really good. And he's going over the pit on the whip. Everything is like another iconic moment for this film.
And everything's been parodied and referenced, and it's still great.
I mean, the boulder scene is referenced, or parodied rather, in Weird Al Yankovic's UHF. So, like, that's really all you need to know that this is an iconic scene.
I've only seen UHF once, and I was in high school. I didn't appreciate it the way I would when I ever get around to watching it again.
Probably time for a revisit then.
It is. Agreed. I'll also be recorded about it if I do it, but yes. I had a question that never dawned on me until this viewing. After he's running from the temple, after Belloc takes the gold idol, I was thinking, like, he didn't run that far, but now that I'm thinking about it, like, he probably must have been running a while to get to where the airplane was.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought about it. Like, oh, he just ran over the edge. Like, wait, no, it doesn't make sense, because he already had to do all this traversing to get to where he's at, so that means the plane's not going to be near.
Yeah, that's called movie,
I know. It didn't bother me. It just never occurred to me to think about how far he's been running.
Yeah, that's true. Or else, it could be that he went the long way, because sometimes Indiana Jones makes mistakes, so maybe he misread the map, and there was really like a staircase going up the other way.
And I guess you would be faster, even because you know where the hell you're going, versus trying to just find a random tomb.
And maybe he's going downhill,
Yeah.
It
does look like
zero things, actually. Complaints about this movie. Zero.
No, I mean, there's things you could nitpick if you're like trying to find something to nitpick, or trying to make a joke like Big Bang Theory was.
Right.
But like one thing that I've seen pointed out where I'm like, oh yeah, well, I guess that doesn't make a lot of sense, is that he rides the U-boat on the outside. So I guess they decided to stay at the surface just for reasons.
You know about the deleted scene?
No. Is there a deleted scene that explains that?
Yes. There's a deleted scene that they should have kept in my opinion, where they keep the periscope up and he's hanging onto the periscope.
Yeah.
Right. But did he hold his breath the whole time? Oh, they keep the periscope up.
above the water.
Above line. Water the whole time. Well, I guess they could do that.
Yeah, because they're not in a, you know, heavily contested area, and they're going to a U-boat shelter. So, like, it's probably their territory anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still don't think it's realistic they would have stayed up there, but it's fine. That's the only, and again, that's like a minor nitpick, and there's really nothing else I could point out. Like, there's casting stuff I don't know if we did mention on the air or not, but, you know, that they have a Welshman playing an Arab guy, but
we didn't.
Other than that, really, I don't know what you could even point out about this.
You know, I never really even thought about that, like, all the times I've seen this movie. I also really like that actor a lot.
Well, I mean, I didn't know John Rhys-Davies was Welsh until I saw Lord of the Rings, so I assumed he was Arab.
Yeah, he does a really good job. I mean, it is. They wouldn't do that today, but I feel like, and it's not, he's not playing a fool. He's playing like a guy who helps Indy, and he like,
right.
I mean, he's a little bit cowardly, but at the same time, he's like Indy's best bud. And he knows, he knows like the Pirates of Penzance or whatever. So I feel like he's
great. I think he's brave. And, they play some, I was thinking my brain is the Last Crusade. Where, you know, he goes to get the camels.
Right.
He's like, I said, no camels. Those are 5 camels. They're from my brother's car, you know? And it's like, he has little jokes like that throughout, you know, in both the movies. But no, it's never like he's never a clown or whatever.
Right. It's
not a negative stereotyped role. I mean, the only thing you can accuse really Salah of is being friendly.
Right. Yeah.
Exactly.
Awesome. He
saves his life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Multiple times.
I got to meet him at a convention, and he was telling me every time he sees Spielberg, he always likes to tell Spielberg, I'm in the good Indiana Jones movies. And this is before Dial of Destiny, but I just thought that was hilarious.
I remember
him being like, I doubt he sees him very often.
He is in the good Indiana Jones movies.
No, he's not
that's
wrong.
Accurate. He's that in both the good movies.
So I just thought that was just one of those things that always stuck with me when I met him. Real nice guy, too, by the way. Like, really nice. When he was coming over the table to his line, there was a woman in a wheelchair, and he stopped over, started talking to her, took a picture with her, and then went to all the people that were waiting in line. But it was just nice. Like, he was just, he seemed like a really cool guy.
Nice.
That's nice.
I got Treebeard, a Funko Pop Treebeard signed by him.
Oh. Oh,
because there was no Gimli yet, or Salah at the time.
I forgot that he did the voice of him, too.
It was the only Funko Pop at the time of anything that he had done that, otherwise I would have gotten Gimli, or I would have did Salah.
I forgot Salah that also, now. Actually.
But nice guy. No, but to kind of, like, another thing I want to mention that, like, I guess I didn't, I've always, maybe I've always liked it, but I appreciate it more in this watching, like, when he's at the school, just the way they do that, and just, like, with the girls, it's almost all women, but one guy in the class.
Yeah.
Just here's little another, things.
Here's another, yeah, there was one guy with an apple.
Yes, who leaves an apple on the desk, yeah.
They did delete a scene, so they deleted another scene, which is a wise choice, where when Marcus Brody comes to Indy's house, Indy is entertaining the lady with the thing on her eyelids.
Oh, yeah.
She's leaving right as Marcus comes.
Yeah.
They're like, it's a little bit wrong.
Okay. Yeah, I'm glad that was cut out.
Yeah.
I think I want the sub scene that you mentioned, but I'm okay with that scene cut out.
Yeah.
There was also another cut scene of a German soldier apparently deciding whether or not to kill Salah after he was captured. And
that's true.
From what everybody says, that scene was amazing. Because they just got this, like, random student to play the part, and he did such a good job, but they ended up cutting it because it was too long, and I've never seen it. I want to see it. I'm sure it's available.
I think it's on YouTube. I think they are available on YouTube. But, yeah, so they made some wise choices. But, yes, the school scene is really good. It is my favorite exposition scene, maybe, in movies, when him and Marcus are talking to the army guys, and they talk about the Ark of the Covenant. By the way, we're recording this Easter weekend. This is a Passover movie, let's say. This is Ten Commandments.
It's not be released in Easter weekend, but yes.
It is an Easter movie. The scene where he's like telling them about the Ark's power, and he's showing them the Bible, and then it had the John Williams eerie music playing in the background, just gets me every time. It's like such a great scene.
That's very good.
Also, I think this is the movie that taught me what the Ark of the Covenant was.
Well, if you don't grow up religious, I mean, it's not really a part of
even if you Christian. Do, it's not talked about in Christian churches very much at all.
No. I didn't grow up religious, even though my dad is sort of religious. He was a monk at one point, and he has a ton of statues and books that came with him when he left. But I don't know.
I think if you're Christian, Yeah, if you're not Jewish, like, you mainly know it from this movie, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Definitely. I mean, I grew up very religious and never heard of it until this movie.
I grew up fairly religious, and I do remember the Ark of the Covenant being brought up in Sunday school, but it was specifically in, like, the, you know, baby's first Bible stories context.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, come to think of it, maybe so, actually.
Yeah, like, nothing about what the Bible actually says happens to people who mess with it.
Which I don't think is anything. I think it's kind of made up for this movie.
Oh no. Is it? If you touch the Ark, you die.
Right. I don't think it, like, looking at it. I think the looking at it is a reference to Lot's wife looking back.
Well, that, and, you know, averting your eyes from the glory of the Lord's vengeance.
Right.
I'd have to reread the Old Testament. My favorite testament, but
like there's all sorts of magical what's it's associated with the Ark. When the Jewish people were carrying it throughout the desert, they were crossing a river, and as soon as the feet of the priests that were carrying the Ark touched the waters, it dried up so that everybody could cross pass over the river.
Mm.
It was directly responsible for the walls of Jericho falling. It wasn't just a ram's horn. The Ark was there too.
Oh. So it's all right. So it's a pretty big WMD at the time.
Yeah, it's a pretty big deal. It brought a lot of plagues onto the people of Ashdod, rather. It didn't mess around. And if you even touch it, you die.
That's cool. I like when movies take stuff from history /
mythology. Yeah.
Yes. Because I don't.
Or religion, or whatever.
I mean, I consider parts of this historical and parts of this mythology. So.
Yeah, I don't know how much about when he talks about Shishak and the city being destroyed for a year in a sandstorm. I don't know how much that is historical, but it may be mythological, I guess. You know, it may be something that's people have talked about.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like the Ark was probably a real thing that they used to carry the command. You know, the commandments are real, but, or it was just a chest that somebody made and said, here, this goes along with our story.
There is a church in Ethiopia that claims to have the Ark still.
But nobody's allowed to look at it, right?
Right. Nobody's allowed to look at it, yes.
We have it, but you can't see it. But just trust us, I promise.
I know what you're talking about, Peter. I watched a documentary about that.
I should have known. Yeah, I should have known.
Long time ago, back when I was still in Milwaukee. I
hear what you're saying about the loving the history of it. Like I am, and for people that don't know, I'm a history teacher, professor, or adjunct professor. And as a kid, I was just like, I wanted to be Indiana Jones. That's who I wanted to be. And as a kid, I mean, when I was 18, 19, 20 in college, I had a framed picture of Indiana Jones on my wall because, like, that's my goal. I want to be Indiana Jones, who's, you know, like a really bad archaeologist, but he makes it look really fun. I didn't do archaeology. Almost wish I had, but I do think my, like, you know, choosing history as my career was at least somewhat influenced by Indiana Jones.
That's really cool.
I kind of considered my two, like, as a kid, my heroes, like, were Indiana Jones and Han Solo and Captain Call from Lonesome Dove. Those are my heroes as a kid growing
That's
up.
Cool.
That's really cool.
That's right. Also, in the scene in the school, I don't think I ever caught this before, or maybe I didn't pay enough attention. Like, when he's saying, oh, yeah, I'm sure you followed all the laws you're supposed to follow, huh? Well, no questions asked. We'll buy this.
Yeah.
It fits very much the 30s.
Colonizing grave robber, baby. That's the way to go.
Well, that's how a lot of museums got their stuff. So,
oh, 100%.
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah, so many. I was just, like, the other day, I was reading about, like, the Pillars of Ramses. And they still have the one of them in Paris. Like, it's still there. And it's like, that doesn't seem okay. I thought they would have to give that back eventually. But it's still
it's like Rosetta Stone. I believe the Rosetta Stone is still in Paris, too, I think.
Oh, is it? Yeah. I just know that this is, like, really big, tall pillar in, like, a big central square in Paris. And then the other one is outside the Temple of Ramses in Luxor.
Yeah.
And it's, like, you can see, it's just, like, it's missing one of the pillars. There's supposed to be two pillars there, and it's missing one because one of them's still in Paris. I'm like, is Egypt okay with that?
Like,
they're a full-on, like, country in the UN and stuff now. Are they okay with this?
Yeah, I think there's always, I think some countries have gotten things back, but I don't know what the specific deal is. But, you know, Egypt's one of those places where every European country has something, and I believe they're always miffed about it.
Yeah, I would assume.
We give them a lot of military aid, so I think they may be quiet about it as long as we keep the money flowing. So maybe.
Yeah. Because you don't think about how much stuff was just stolen from places across the world.
Yeah. You know, and here's another thing. Indiana Jones doesn't do anything. No, Indiana Jones has a mission, like Bond. He's given a mission by the U.S. government mm-hmm. to get the Ark, and he does. By the end of the movie, he completes his mission. So it's like, what? That's where we see. We see a roller coaster where Indiana Jones does his task, and he goes back to doing what he's doing. So,
but also, like, everything in this movie pays off.
Right.
And that's another thing, like every little thing, like, when you get to the bar with Marion, you see Marion have a drinking contest, which right. then plays a part later in the movie when she tries to escape, like everything connects. And I just, as I've been doing the show more and I pay more attention to movies, and like, it made me appreciate this movie so much more because everything fits together perfectly.
Yeah. I mean, from the very beginning, Belloc stealing the golden idol.
Yeah.
You know, introduces Belloc for later on. He's going to show up, like, I mean, much later, honestly. Like, it's a while before Belloc shows up again, I feel like.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, you're talking about the drinking contest and, you know, the guys that hire Jones, we see them again at the very end of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very well-written script. And, you know, we have to give a, I know the authors, you know, Philip Kaufman was a director and writer, and then Lawrence Kasdan is a director and writer as well. So they did a good job. You know, it chose to show you that if you don't let George Lucas write your whole thing, let somebody else help out writing it.
Well, yeah, Lawrence Kasdan did work on Empire Strikes Back too.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But I was reading Kasdan had only been a professional screenwriter for a month when Lucas first hired him.
Wow.
That's pretty cool.
That is crazy.
Pretty cool. They did a good job.
He read his script for a movie called Continental Divide. So it's like a John Belushi. Yeah, John Belushi movie.
Oh, yeah.
John Belushi rom-com. He read that and he's like, that's the guy I need.
Fantastic.
And it's mostly him, Spielberg, and Lucas writing it. I don't know where Philip Kaufman came in.
Yeah, I forget exactly, but
he's credited as a writer, but I don't know where he came into the equation. Yeah.
Lucas originally wanted Kaufman to direct it.
Like, oh, interesting.
Lucas and Kaufman were the prime mover on the original idea, which was Indiana Smith.
Right.
And they came up with a lot of the stuff. Kaufman was the one who actually suggested Ark of the Covenant.
Oh, interesting.
So, and go ahead. No, go ahead.
Oh, no. By all means.
I just really wanted to say that, like, Spielberg had made it hits, but it wasn't like wasn't considered like, every movie he make was a hit, because the movie he made before this was called 1941 and it was a big flop.
Mm-hmm.
And people were saying, maybe you're not up to snuff, Spielberg. And so this movie had a very clear budget and a very clear timetable, and which he stuck to, and he did it. But like, he did not have carte blanche to make this movie. Like, he was like on a leash from Paramount Pictures.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And before Paramount accepted, nobody wanted this.
Yeah. Because
they shopped it around a lot.
Yeah, because nobody knew what Raiders or the Lost Ark were. Like, it was not, the title itself was like, people like, I don't know what this is. This is not sexy enough.
Yeah.
And so it was amazing. It was became a hit. But not amazing when you watch it.
I can't imagine going to the movie, not knowing what this is, and just be like, oh, I'm going to go see this movie. No trailer, just sit down and be like, wow.
If you watch the original trailer, which I did, it doesn't leave you with much to know. Like, it's a very mysterious trailer. It's like, yeah,
it's a really good trailer for that reason.
So like, it's like, from the director of Jaws comes a movie about something, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and it shows like a desert scene, but he doesn't show anything else. So,
back when trailers were great.
Yeah.
They were an art form.
Yeah.
So they're at the bar in Nepal, and it's a great scene. You know, the sound effects are really good. Those gunshots and punches are really excellent in this movie. Like, they go full throttle. I think it's Ben Burtt again who did Star Wars. So
yes, it is.
Yeah.
There's one really funny scene to me when they say, shoot both of them. And you just see the guy going, what? And he just, because he realizes they're going to kill him.
Yeah.
Out of those little touches.
That's the Nazi's name, Tote. He's really good. He's like,
oh, so good.
He's a great villain. Yeah.
He was actually, they wanted him because he looked like, crap, what's his name? Peter Lorre.
Oh, yeah.
Older actor.
Oh, yeah, he does look like Peter Lorre.
And he kind of talks like him, too. He kind of does.
He is so bizarre and scary. Yeah. And you never find out his first name.
Mm-mm.
It's just Tote.
which means death in German.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Is that the interrogator guy that burns his hand?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The guy wears black.
Gestapo agent.
Yeah.
They don't ever
although
say that, though.
The novelization of the movie did eventually reveal his first name is Arnold.
Not too scary, but...
I don't know, man. If somebody comes at me named like Arnold and Arnold he talks Death. Like that, I'm terrified.
Yeah. I mean, yes, I would agree. You know, I mean, it's not about the name or the fact that you wear glasses. It's about your personality. I
think we're gonna God. The way he comes into Marion's bar and he's just like, ah, we are not thirsty. Oh, Jesus. Yeah. No. Ooh.
And he takes that hot poker. Yeah. I mean, it's such a great scene. There's a good buildup to the eventual almost torture.
Oh. Yeah. And then he becomes a scream king because that yell when he grabs the hot medallion.
Oh, yeah.
That's haunting, man.
Yeah. He just is such an expressive face.
Oh, he's so good.
He just looks so creepy. Like, even like his IMDb photo just looks like a serial killer.
I'm pretty sure he's British. So he's probably just, I think I've seen him in something else and just talks like with a British accent. But, you know, he seems like a normal, like, British guy. But if you see him in this, he's putting on a... He's putting on a show, so.
He's in The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension, to be precise.
And this actually got him a lot of villainous roles, too.
I'm sure.
He was in Sahara, Flesh and Blood, Red Sonja, Firefox.
I believe, he got it playing Russians and Germans, I think, the villains at the time, where it was what he was ended up being played. So.
Like, he's just good.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He's good. There's a lot of, you know... I'm very surprised this movie's PG. I know at the time there was no PG-13, but it's a very intense PG movie.
Oh, extremely intense.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Not just because of the ending, just because, like, people get shot and, like, you see blood and you see, like, people getting tortured and stuff like this, you know?
Yeah, they were real loose with that PG back then, though.
Yeah.
You could get a boob in a PG movie back
right.
then.
Right, exactly.
Two of them, even.
Yeah. People like, let's take the kids. It's a nice night out for the kids and the family.
Yeah. And this, you know, obviously, since most of us saw it when we were young, this was considered a family film.
Right.
Now, Carrie, I do have a question.
Yes.
If they would have named this Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark, would you have seen it sooner?
Yeah, I mean, I assume so. It was one of those things of just like, I never, you know, like, where would I have gotten the opportunity if we didn't have it on VHS?
Mm.
And I was never over at someone else's house who had it on VHS, then there's just never any opportunity to see it, you know? So, like, I just didn't even know it existed at first. And then someone told me, and I was like, oh. And I said 30s. I might have been in my 20s. I might have been in college when I saw it, come to think of it. But it's just kind of weird because I was born 1983. So, like, this movie was around, but I just never saw it. It never came on TV. It doesn't feel like it ever came on TV. But I don't remember seeing any of the Indiana Jones movies on TV.
They were definitely on TV.
Yeah, I don't know why. One, I just never saw them on TV.
I know this one was on ABC at one point.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
Yeah, I believe the VHS copy I had was ABC Movie Event, ABC Movie Night or something, was the commercials beforehand, so.
Oh, yeah.
I know we started talking about the cast a little bit. I want to talk about Karen Allen.
Yeah.
As Marion Ravenwood.
She's so great.
Oh, I love her so much in this movie. Like, I can't think of a bad movie she's done, but...
I can think of two, but I know what you mean. I know what you mean by that.
Yeah.
She, you know, it's feels like she should have been in more movies in the 80s and stuff. And maybe she just wasn't things I haven't seen. But I know, yeah, she's a really strong actress, at least in this, and I'm sure in other things, too.
Yeah, I'm really only familiar with her from this and this. She's in The Sandlot.
Mm-hmm.
She's the mom.
Yeah.
Is she the mom in The Sandlot, or is she just a mom in The Sandlot?
Smalls'
mom. She's Smalls' mom. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, after this, it was just not, I think the next
big one. Oh, she's in Scrooge.
Claire in Scrooge.
That's my favorite Christmas movie. Yeah.
Yep.
That's true.
She was great in Cruising, the Pacino gay serial killer movie.
Oh, right.
Animal House. She was in there. Didn't really have a lot to do, but...
One of the Sorority Girls, yeah. Yeah, I'm looking at her IMDb, and I've only seen, like, a handful of her movies, so...
Yeah, they wanted someone, I guess, to, like, hold their own against Indy, and she really does. And she's not, like, a danceable... She's not, like... She has to get rescued a couple times, but you feel like, you know, that's just the circumstances where she gets overpowered. Like, she could definitely escape, and she in fact tries to escape from Belloc. So
she definitely reminds me of two different actresses from the same time. I'm trying to remember the name of the actress that was on Saturday Night Live that did Weekend Update with Dan Aykroyd.
Jane Curtin.
Yeah, she reminds me a little of Jane Curtin. She's got a little Jane Curtin to her. And then I'm so bad of names. Lois Lane.
Margot Kidder.
Yeah.
Yeah. Little right. Margot Kidder too. I feel like she could have played Lois Lane very easily.
I can see that, yeah.
Yeah. Like it's almost a similar character. You've got like a tough person who's a match for the main character personality wise and does have to be rescued sometimes, but also gets herself out of stuff.
Yeah, that's true. It's very true.
Which is what you want. You don't want a damsel. You want someone that can hold their own with Indy. And that is the only thing I like about that fourth movie is that they end up together.
Yeah, that's true. I think the other Indy movies do suffer in that the women characters, at least in the second and third, are far weaker than Marion.
So I don't think Elsa's a weak character. She's just a Nazi.
Yeah.
You know.
And that's unfortunate.
I don't think she has the same personality. Like,
no,
she's not weak at all, but she's not distinctive enough.
No, she's empty. And no, Elsa's no Marion. No, I'm joking. And the less said about about Steven Spielberg's wife, the better.
Willie Scott.
Oh, my God. Seriously, I loved that movie when I was a kid, and I went back and watched it recently, and she is. It's unbelievable how annoying a character she is.
Oh,
yeah.
You're not wrong. The best thing about that movie is Short Round.
Oh, yeah. He's amazing. He's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. They made the right choice with him. But with Kate Capshaw, a.k.a. Willie Scott, I don't think so.
No.
Yeah. Well, just the character. It's not even Kate Capshaw's fault.
Yeah. Probably. She's directing, but the character of Willie Scott is, yeah.
Garbage.
Yeah. But we love Marion, and we love, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I love it.
I really do like Marion, too, in this movie. And, like, I'm just so happy they didn't go with that original idea of making her, like, early 20s. So happy that didn't happen.
Yeah. Oh,
God, that would have been so gross.
But I would have had a lot of issues when she's like, it's been 10 years. Like, what?
She does say, I was a child. And he does say, you knew what you were doing. But that could don't to know me, what
that's that all could be 18, 17, 19, right. I mean, 20. Like, I made a lot of dumb decisions when I was 19, 20, that I was still a child, and I wasn't by this country's standards. But, so, yeah, that's all I took. I never took it as.
She's 30 in the movie, so 10 years ago she was 20. That's fine. Because she does say 10 years, right?
Yeah, it's been 10 years. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what she says, yeah.
And Paul Freeman as Rene Belloc.
Excellent. Yeah, he's great.
I love him.
He's great. He's like almost sympathetic at points.
Like you can see he doesn't want to be working with the Nazis. He would rather be anywhere else but with the Nazis. But he can't turn away from the history.
He's not as good as Indiana Jones. I feel like. Right. Exactly. Yeah, he's always like one step behind him. So the only way he gets ahead is by allying with the Nazis.
Yeah.
So.
And this is also 1936. So this is before.
Right.
Because I was like wondering, because he's a Frenchman. I'm like, this got to be before they invaded France. Otherwise, why the hell are you working with them? But yeah, it's 4 years before France.
And he's a Jean-Luc Picard. He's a British Frenchman.
Yeah.
And yeah. When do they invade Poland?
When do the Nazis invade Poland?
Yeah.
1939.
Okay. So that all fits everything then. This is before, you know, they come out as the terribleness as we see.
Yeah, there were definitely tensions in the real world. There were tensions between, you know, Britain and America and Germany, but there wasn't. This is before Czechoslovakia and Austria and stuff. So this is the Olympics.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's 1936. It's the year the Nazis hosted the Olympics.
Yeah.
It's the year before they won the Best Foreign Picture Oscar for Triumph of the Will, which then George Lucas played an homage to in A New Hope. As we discussed in a previous episode, check out our New Hope episode for
that. So people had a sense that they're like, these people are pretty creepy, but they hadn't really done anything yet to like, it was more
they
of
had
an
a lot
ominous.
Of fans. They had a lot of fans, but they at this point had not taken any territory. I don't think they take Austria until 37. They don't take Czechoslovakia until 37. And Czechoslovakia is 38. They take Poland in 39. So yeah, at this point, they're building up their military. They're getting pretty big. They've hosted the Olympics. They took down all the no Juden signs during the Olympics, put them back up. But they haven't. The Holocaust is still at the point where they're just doing Jim Crow segregation to the Jews for the most part.
Yeah. And before everything would have gotten out, too, like what's really going on.
Yeah. I mean, they knew they were treating them as bad as we treated, almost not quite as bad as we treated blacks in America. So at that point, yeah. so we weren't super concerned. There are a lot of Americans, big fans of Hitler.
They make one reference to this in the movie. They don't really talk about that. But at one point, the Nazi officer says, "I'm uncomfortable with this Jewish ritual."
Yeah.
Toward the end. And that's like a point like, OK, Nazis don't like Jews.
That was one of the last lines that was added to the script before shooting.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So like they just had to get that in there. Otherwise, the Nazis just seem like, you know, they're dicks. But you throw in, you know, the whole Jewish thing and then, oh, yeah, they're super assholes. That's right. We hate them. Fuck the Nazis.
They also don't. Do they say Nazis? They just say Germans in this.
No, they must say Nazis.
I know they say Germans in the early part of the movie because I had the movie playing in the background.
The Nazis have discovered Tannis.
Okay.
There you go. Okay.
I was really confused for a second because
I was just curious.
That would have been impressive.
They
do.
They say that that's the line, right? Well, obviously, yeah. What do the Nazis want Tannis. From then? Raven was no Nazi.
Okay. Yep. Yeah. Say it because
the Nazis had discovered Tannis. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And I like that they established right out the gate. Indiana Jones, he doesn't like Nazis, guys.
Yeah.
he doesn't like them. He's right out from the very beginning. He's like, he's very clear that he isn't a fan.
Right.
That's important.
Good. I forget that people were, I mean, people still are, but I forget that people were fans of them at this time.
Yeah. They had some popularity.
Yeah. Well, people are fans of him at this time that we're recording it. So
yeah, right.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's it was a different story. Yeah. You know, a lot of the times if they were in America, they were also super, you know, they weren't a fan of other races as well. If you were a fan of the Nazis. So they were like,
right.
We should do what the Nazis like. They're Nazis are like us. So we should like them. You know,
definitely.
It's a whole nother topic. But yeah, they did have love. Yeah.
See, I wonder if Hitler was alive today. He saw a Bible with German words on the front of it, huh? For their government. Huh?
I mean, well, I don't think he'd sell it. He just mandated to be in the stores.
But you got to sell it so that you get money for it, you know.
I don't think Hitler had any lawsuits going at.
No, I don't think he did either. He was smarter than that. In that case. But no, just I had to. I just have to make that joke because I just keep laughing because the Bible was $59.99. Someone's like, you know, if you flip it backwards, it's 666. And I'm like, that's everything, but that's hilarious. But everything in Egypt, like, because most of the movie takes place in Egypt, and I love all the Egypt stuff. Like, we talked about Salah. Salah's great.
Yeah.
I mean, even you get a few scenes, like, you get a scene where Marion's to kind of prove her, you know, show that she's not weak, whereas the guy with the knife is chasing after her and she just beats the shit out of him with a frying pan.
Yeah.
I love that little scene.
Right. Yeah.
And then she dragged him so easily over a step.
Yeah. Like,
she's got a powerful core.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's tough.
Yeah.
She's a good character. She really, I know you guys talked about earlier, and I edit, but she's just such a good character.
Yeah.
Yeah, she is great.
Everything with that chase leading up to when they think she dies, I really enjoy all that. It's just so entertaining.
Her hiding in the basket and all that.
Yeah, it's all just such a, and I think you kind of need that because the movie has its moments of, you know, where you have exposition and some stuff. And like, you need an action scene right now to get you, even though like I never stopped being into this movie, but you need the scene to keep you just super interested.
Yeah, there's one like every like 5 minutes or so, there's another little action scene. Maybe there's maybe more or whatever, but it seems like that.
I still love that part when the guy, which I know is now ad-lib, where the guy's all doing the sword thing, he just shoots him.
I mean, it wasn't really ad-libbed, necessarily.
He just shot out of necessity.
Yeah. Everybody else was sick.
Yeah. But it wasn't in the script originally. It was more elaborate, and then it was like the biggest laugh line in the movie, according to at the time. So.
And honestly, it's probably one of the most iconic things. It's the most Han Solo that Indiana Jones has ever felt.
Yes.
That's true. Well, there's that theory that it was popular in the 80s where that the Indiana Jones movies are the hallucination of Han Solo and Carbonite, because you see on the plane says OBCPO, and then in the next movie he goes to Club Obi-Wan. And I think R2-D2 and C-3PO are on a hieroglyphics in the arc, in the arc room. Yeah.
Yeah, and the Well of Souls are there.
In the Well of Souls, yeah.
I mean, I think it's just a funny thing. I don't buy it, obviously. But
I don't buy it either.
It's just like a fun thing. People in the 80s, they were starved for, you know, any sort of fandom. So you had to get what you could.
It was pre-internet. It was a dark time.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, I had to meet in person to talk about movies.
Ugh. I like this way where we just do it over Skype.
You could get a party. You get a party line, Mike, and talk to your friends in the old days, but it wasn't the same.
Oh man, I remember how hyped I was when I got three-way calling for the first time. Hot damn!
Boy, the gray hairs are coming out.
Oh, they're large and in charge here. I'm not even afraid to admit it.
All right, so they're in Egypt, and they think Marion's dead. I really like the scene where Belloc is telling, where they're at the bar and Belloc's telling Indy, you know, I bury this watch in the sand, you know, dig it up in 1,000 years and it's priceless. And I'm just a shadowy reflection of you. Such a great scene.
He gives the one bad day speech from Batman.
That's, there you go.
I mean, it pretty much is.
I do like when he's just about to kill him and then everyone else gets up with guns.
Right.
I do love that. He's like, nobody, they don't care about what we do. They don't care if we kill each other.
You want to talk to God? Let's both go. I've got nothing better to do.
Yeah, love that's it. A great line. It's so good.
And it shows how much Indiana Jones cares about Marion. Yeah. Like, he's just drinking his problems away. He's willing to throw his life away to kill this man.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, Belloc deserves it.
Oh, he'll get what he deserves later.
Oh, everybody will.
Yep.
Oh, I just realized he's smoking a hookah too in this scene. Mm-hmm. That's fitting.
Is it? Yeah. Well, you're in the Middle East.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When in, you know, Marrakesh. I know they're not in Marrakesh. Leave me alone.
It sounded good. It was good.
It did sound good.
But man, now I'm thinking about hookahs. Damn it. I lost my train of thought.
Well, that also comes back to a my mother yesterday texted me. She's like, oh, she was trying to describe what a hookah was. And I'm like, she's like, oh, I'm like, hookah. She's like, how'd you know that? I'm like, because
hookahs are awesome.
Yeah.
I don't smoke anything, but I'm aware of lots of stuff.
I smoked one about 20 years ago. It's pretty cool.
I'm just aware of things.
I still have mine and use it fairly regularly.
Nice.
I can believe that.
It's fun. You know, it's just regular, good flavored tobacco.
Oh, I didn't smoke tobacco out of the one I smoked, but but it was good. It was very smooth.
Yeah.
It gives the smoke lots of time to cool down before it gets to you, so it doesn't burn your throat.
I can't do that stuff, unfortunately.
I'll stick with the edible version of that.
Well, like I said, it was 20 years ago.
We were all young and, you know, reckless back in the day, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I haven't done edibles recently, but recently as in like the last year. So
I haven't done edibles in the past week and you know it.
Yeah. I just don't do it because my wife gets mad at me. So that's the only reason I don't do it. Because I get annoying. And she's
I can never get edibles dialed in. They either do nothing or completely lay me out. So I don't really do those very often. There you go.
I the first time I did it was in Vegas. But just... I like how Sol's like, oh, yeah, she died. Let's keep going. Let's go get the arc. Where Sol just doesn't, you know, like, all right. But well, it fits. It fits the characters. Fits that.
He's there to do his job. He's there to.
Yeah. And Sol sees that he's going to kill himself drinking.
Yeah.
If he doesn't do something. So, you know, respect. Have yourself a dude like Sol in your life, everyone.
Yeah, right.
Like, get someone who can sing the entire score of the HMS Pinafore, like my man Sol. Because that's what's up. It's so good that Sideshow Bob had to do it on The Simpsons.
Yep.
I do love the scene when there was the old guy that's translating for them and you have the bad dates. Every time I have to quote that as it happens, every time I watch this movie, I'm like,
do you put your hand up too or do you just quote it?
I think I've done both in front of my wife and looked at me. But I also have eaten dates and I don't buy them, but dates are really good.
Oh, I love dates.
My grandma used to buy them when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Loved them.
I used to eat them a lot when I was in charge of produce and I was the guy that threw out all the produce. So if the stuff was expired, but it wasn't like I had to go throw it away, I was like, oh, I'll have a date or two while I chuck this into the bin.
That's
my first try date.
We're confessing to all sorts of crimes tonight.
Hey, that wasn't a crime. That was against the company. But to be fair, that store also doesn't exist anymore. So.
And this is why I don't use my real government name on the podcast.
Curses. We've just, you know, Ken's going to be free and we're all going to be in prison for various felonies. So
I'll make sure to cover the rest of the series for all of you.
But no, I mean, that's how I got to try dates, because I was always curious about them, but I never wanted to buy them. So that was how I tried them. And every so often I think about buying them, but I haven't had them in years.
Something to think about. I'm sure. Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure I probably said bad date as I chucked them into the bin, too. I'm sure that happened.
No, I was hoping you would do that.
I'm sure I did. We used to have to throw out so much stuff because, you know, it's a grocery store, what you do, unfortunately. So, oh yeah, there was lots of dumb things that were said as I stood outside by a dumpster in the summer.
Yeah, see, you think of that. I just think of my 20s whenever he says bad dates.
Oh,
zing. Hi-o.
But just this movie just flows so good. Everything just goes from one thing to the next. The stuff when they're in the dig site, like one thing I don't think I paid enough attention to before, or maybe I did, but I was thinking about it during this watching, is how much all the workers get excited for Indy and are excited because, I mean, they're not happy that the Ark is being taken away from them, which fits. Like, you know, it's at this point, you know, an Egypt relic and it's being taken by a bunch of Nazis.
Yeah, well, it seems like they might not know what they're looking for. You know, it seems
good point.
Only a couple, like I'm sure Belloc and then, you know, whatever kept it really quiet what they're actually digging for. So that as far as they know, they're just looking for like, you know, Pharaoh's tomb or something. I don't know.
What are we looking for? Oh, you know, box.
Yeah. They're getting paid. They're presumably getting paid, I guess. They're Nazis, so who knows?
Yeah.
No. They do say they're hired and they're getting paid.
Yeah.
But they're not getting paid
pennies, though.
So. Yeah.
I think I read just as an aside that, I mean, they filmed this movie in Tunisia, where they filmed Star Wars, and they had all the Germans were paid by like European tourists. And I think some of them were because they just did a casting call. Hey, are you a European person? Do you want to be in this movie? Here's a Nazi uniform. A lot of people were happy to do it.
Yeah.
And now so they got something to tell their kids.
Exactly. Yeah.
Grandkids. They'll get free lunch off of that for at least a couple weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Hey, I don't blame them.
It's great. I love
being a movie.
Yeah. I mean, well, that's what being an extra is, you know? Most extras are happy. They might not get paid a lot, but they get to be in a movie. I love the scene where, you know, all the workers are chanting and, you know, Indy's silhouetted against the sunset. That's a really great shot.
Good. Oh, man. So many iconic shots in this movie.
Yeah. So good.
Best use of shadows since German Expressionism. Yeah. Oh, God.
So well done.
Yeah.
I don't know why I just think it's funny how he's taking off all the disguise and has a hat on. Like, yeah, maybe you might want to still be disguised, but hey,
he's got a, you know, sometimes style above logic. So,
but I also, I guess it didn't really occur to me until last night. Like, yeah, he leaves her, like, she's there the whole night, tied up in the camp, and then he's just digging.
Yeah, he doesn't want to be discovered. Yeah. It's, you know, it's a dick move, but he wants the.
I mean, I don't know what if he thought, okay, I'm going to get this out of here and they're not going to notice when I cart it away, but
presumably he was going to come back for her, you know, so.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
It was more important that he keep the Nazis from having the Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah, exactly.
The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the one.
Right.
And exactly. I was just upset that she was dead. Now I know she's alive. I'm okay to leave her.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, legitimately, I don't think Belloc was going to let them kill her.
No.
No, I think he was smitten. Probably in deep smit, which is fair.
He's very upset when they throw her into the pit as well. Yeah. Although he's not too torn about it, but he didn't want them to do it.
Yeah, more of a aw man.
Yeah,
type of upset.
Yeah, he lost one of his perks, you know.
Yeah. Oh, that I still love that part. I mean, like the thing with the snake. Like in the first part of the movie, you have with the snake in the plane where he's upset, and then here you have it pay off. Snakes. Why did it have to be snake?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of the plane, I just think this is a little off topic, but just the craziest thing to me, the guy flying the plane, he's not an actor. He's never been in any movie other than this. He's a pilot that flies like directors and people for like location shooting and stuff.
Oh,
the guy that played Jock?
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
I was reading about him. Yeah. Like he's not an actor. He was in this. He was like, he kept working for Spielberg. Whenever they had to evacuate the island when they were filming Jurassic Park and the hurricane was hitting and they had to evacuate the crew and everything, he flew like the principal cast out of Hawaii.
Yeah. Like, so because the opening was filmed in Hawaii as well. So.
Oh, yeah. Crazy. Jurassic Park. He probably works in Hawaii.
Right. Yeah. And that's cool. I always assumed, you know, I'm thinking about it, I'm like, oh, the scene where they're on the plane was filmed probably in the air and they just dubbed the lines in because Harrison Ford's a pilot and the other guy's a pilot. So they're like, oh, they actually flew this plane. They just dubbed in the dialogue because you couldn't hear it. So
yeah,
it's better than rear projection. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, which they do some of that.
They do. Movie, they do definitely. Some.
But it's that's cool, though. I mean, that probably wasn't very much acting. You know,
be yourself. No, because it's too, you know, the wind is too much. Like, it looks too good to be a projection. I think they just filmed right. it. They filmed it with another plane beside it. So
I agree.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. I mean, if we're coming up to the, you know, the scene in the tomb is great. We're coming to my, you know, my favorite action scene, which is the truck chase. I watched this so many times when I was a kid. I would just watch this scene. If YouTube were around, I would have watched this scene on repeat on YouTube.
Truck chase is good.
The truck yeah. chase is good. I also love the Wells Hole stuff. Like, I love when he's like, ass, very dangerous. You go first.
I mean, yeah. That's what I mean about Sala being a little bit, you know, but that's comic relief. I guess that's not cowardly. He's a little bit, he's doing a little bit. So.
I mean, he goes down there with them after right. they, you know, after they light snakes on fire.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that would work. I mean, you got to get rid of the snake somehow. You don't really have a whole lot of options. You can't just start shooting. So fire works.
I think in real life, there wouldn't be like snakes are not going to be that congregated. If I recall, like they're not going to be all clumped together on the ground. Right. I could be wrong, but
yeah, I'm pretty sure they don't like each other normally.
Yeah, right, you're not going to get like exactly. a couple thousand snakes in like a colony. They like to hide and stuff. So
does make a good scene, though. That's
right. Sure. It does make a creepy scene. And when you're watching it, you're not concerned about that. You're but, like, OK,
that's just like each movie has its thing. In this movie, it's snakes.
Right. Well, that comes into play in all the movies. But
yeah, but right. it's more like you have snakes in this. Next one, you have a lot of bugs. And then the third one, you have rats.
Right.
Yep.
Yep. And then you have ants too, and other if the you know the unofficial secret Indiana Jones, you know.
I forgot. Yeah, I don't even consider that.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
I try to forget that movie happened.
The less said, the better, maybe.
You know, I've only seen that movie once in theaters. That when the year it came out, same. And I have never seen it since.
Same. Huh. Only I actually did not see it in the theater. I saw it at home. I bought it on DVD and watched it, and then. I don't even know what happened to that DVD, but I don't have it anymore.
Then you destroyed your DVD player.
Yeah, I destroyed my TV.
In a fit of rage.
No, I've literally never seen it again. I fell asleep during it, too. So I didn't actually see that. I didn't see the whole thing. I missed like 30 minutes of it.
I liked it when I saw it in theaters. But then again, that was also the only movie I saw because I just had my son was like one and we were never able to, or not even one yet. And I couldn't get away. So I remember I was so excited. But yeah, I've never seen it since then.
What year is that?
Must be 2007 or 8.
I think it's 2008. 2008, I believe.
Okay.
2008. Yeah, that was the year I got married.
You had other things to do.
Yeah.
You had better things to worry about.
I didn't go see it in the theater. Worst. I think it was like, I just had a feeling I didn't want to see it in the theater, so I didn't.
We remembered episode one. About this? We remembered episode. You know what?
I did it on net. I got it as a disc from Netflix. Oh. That was how I did not buy it. That's what I it was one of my discs from Netflix that I watched because I had the Netflix. I didn't have streaming yet. I had the Netflix where they mail it to you.
Now we know what the mystery solved. There's one scene that creeped me the fuck out this time when you guys are talking about his name, the interrogating guy, interrogating German. When he puts his hand up and says, "Hail Hitler," and you just see the indent of where he burned himself.
Right.
And like, that just creeped me the fuck out both times I've seen this.
Yeah,
recently, like for yesterday and today.
it's a really good reveal.
Yeah, because really they don't really talk about how Bellick got one part of it.
Yeah,
yeah.
So
and the guy's devoted.
Well, I mean that fits. It fits the Nazis perfectly.
Yeah,
and they were devoted to him. I mean,
yeah. Toad is just such a good. I mean, he's such a chilling villain.
Mm-hmm. Like when he comes in the room after when Marion is about to escape and. I when he pulls out the hanger, but you think he's like I always remembered that as a kid. I'm like, okay, he's gonna like, were they gonna torture her? And I'm like, oh, they were gonna choke her. That's what she thought was about to happen. They're gonna choke her to death. That's what it looks like. That's what you would choke somebody with.
Yeah,
beat her. Yeah, piano wires.
Oh yeah.
I will say that joke is they used that joke in 1941, so that's a joke that they recycled, but it works better here than it did in 1941. It's the same setup where somebody comes in, you feel like they're bad, and it turns into a coat hanger.
Oh, but nobody saw 1941, I guess, so it worked out.
Yeah, that's why Spielberg was having a hard time getting this movie made.
Yeah, I'm sure, yeah.
It's so good. I mean, it's just hilarious, too, that it's just a hanger. And then you never see what happens again, I mean, other than she's not killed or anything, and it is until the morning when they find out that he's been digging all night. Because he's been digging all night, he put the freaking ark in a crate and gets it pulled out, and then, you know, just hands it back to Belloc.
Not on purpose, though.
I know. The Well of Souls stuff is just so interesting, like, and also, like, all the dead bodies, and it makes sense, like, that it would empty out somewhere, because when people were building these things, they would have had a way to get out. They didn't just leave them down there.
Yeah, that's right. True.
You know, they built the tomb, and then they went out and exit and resealed it.
Yeah. Yep.
And time will take care of everything after a while.
I realized I got ahead of myself with the truck chase, because we have the flying wing fight.
Oh, so, the flying
wing. Yeah, that's such a fun fight.
Yeah.
The pilot of that ship, also not an actor, that is producer Frank Marshall.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's true. I love the vehicles the kids still do. I love how the Indiana Jones movies are like a throwback to like 1930s vehicles, because you have at the beginning, you have the Pan Am Clipper, like the seaplane that was like a real thing. And you have the flying wing, which was a real thing, but it was never in wide use.
Right.
And then in other movies, you have a Zeppelin, which, you know, again, is a kind of 1930s thing. But
yes,
it looks like it could fly. They built this model airplane that was just a full scale mock-up, and it looks really cool. And so they did a lot of craftsman work for it. It looks really good. Yeah.
I love that. That's practical over everything. That was a kind of a fight Spielberg and Lucas had on this movie, was that Lucas wanted to special effects. We'll use special effects. I got ILM on it. Doesn't matter if they look good, if they're into the story. And Spielberg's like, no, I really want practical effects.
Yeah.
So they have some of both, but it's got a lot of practical in it, which is good for the movie.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
And you can do it. Practical is what you want to do.
And you have, I know it's on location shooting. You know, you can, a lot of movies these days are filmed on green screen, or they're filmed, kind of composites. And like, you can tell this is like filmed in the daylight, You can tell this was filmed in the desert.
Yeah, it looks so good. Being like on location is more expensive, but it's so worth it.
Yeah, it's so good.
Especially when you're telling a globe-trotting story like this, if you can shoot it,
Yeah, exactly.
Plane thing is, every time I have to just turn away, even though I grimace each time I see that when the guy gets his face cut off by the propeller.
Oh, yeah.
You don't see anything. You just see the blood splatter, but God, is it good.
Such a good fight. Like this, it's a fight that you don't think Indiana Jones is going to win. And if it wasn't for the propeller, he probably wouldn't have.
Yeah.
No, a lot of his things are by accident. He just, things just work out his way. Like, I mean, it makes sense that this guy, like, I remember thinking about this when I heard, why don't he just try to like kill him quicker? But he's toying with him. He's like, I got you. And, it's just a test of feet, test of strength. Like he's not worried about anything. And the guy in the pilot tries to shoot him, but can't get a clear shot. Like everything fits correctly. It isn't where just somebody's being stupid to let the action hero survive. Like there's a reason to why all the things happen.
Right.
I miss this. I don't know if they do it in films where they have the hero get the shit beat out of them by like some random guy. It doesn't happen. I don't see it in the Marvel movies, I guess. I mean, most of the time the villain, the big villain gets to be the one to beat up the hero. But like, this is just a random guy who just happened to notice Indiana Jones is like, oh, it's time for some fun.
Yeah. Who is a wrestler.
Right.
A
exactly.
Big dude.
Mm-hmm.
It's so,
I mean, and he thought he won. So it makes sense why he has the guy in the ground and then.
Yeah.
And he just covers his head and he looks back and, oh, my God, I can't even imagine that being the last thing you see. Like, oh.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's got to be quick. It's got to be a quick death. Like, I'm assuming that thing just hits you and you're done. I hope.
I hope.
Let's hope so. I mean, he may be a Nazi, but, I don't want to, even a Nazi shouldn't go out that way, probably. I don't know.
Certain one, sure. There's a couple, a couple people in history. That's okay. Chop them up slowly. They deserve it. I can think of a few, and I'm not going to say their name, but I know a lot of the people.
Right.
But no, it's just the way everything goes. Because of the plane blowing up leads to them loading it on a truck and driving it off, which then leads to that truck chase, which, God, that's a good scene when they're like, "How? What are you going to do?" And he's like, "I'm making this up." It's like, oh,
truck, what truck? And then it cuts to the truck. Oh, such a good cut.
Yeah.
And the music starts, like the John Williams score just goes like very like dun, dun, dun.
It doesn't, they don't hold any punches. Like, and the way they do the music in this movie, like every time that they do the Indiana Jones theme or when just everything just fits perfectly for what they want you to feel.
Yeah. They don't use it too often, but they use it like when he does like the most badass stuff. Yeah.
And everything with the truck is so good. Like the guys that are climbing onto him. Like, I think I was watching it when I was watching it this morning earlier today. Like first that what when later on when he does get in the final truck and the guy throws him out of the truck, when he gets back in, he throws the guy out right the same way.
Yeah,
right.
I love that part. It's a lot of like action comedy.
Yeah.
Really funny action comedy.
And when you see him get run over, you hear and you see his legs and arms go up in the air.
Yeah, that guy's
definitely like the oldest Nazi soldier. He's like 50 years old.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's like, what's going on here? But I know he's a stuntman, but still, yeah. Yeah.
It was unnecessary to have his arms fly up like that.
It's funny, though.
I mean,
like, it's funny, but
it is especially like it's egregious, I guess, gratuitous.
It is because you just see, I mean, they don't come off, but you just see them. They go up in the air like he just got ran over. And it's just so the idea that, you know, you're being squished till the other parts of your body are expanding.
Yeah, like that man has a divot in his body now, and I shouldn't be laughing, but here we are.
But it's so good. Like, and just, I mean, and the whole fact that, like, the idea that he pushes the car off, but they never are really that far behind him. Because when the car chase ends, you know, it's like within seconds from the time that he pulls the truck in and hides it where all the people run in front of it to when the Nazis show up and can't find the truck.
Yeah.
It's so good. And all the people cheering, and I just, and like the part when he brings, like when the guys brings a watermelon or something, or a papaya, some fruit to the, the general, just the German just throws it on the floor, on the ground. Like, ah, I don't want your fruit.
That's so good.
I just love it. But you know, that car chase is everything with him and the horde. It's so well done.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and him getting dragged.
Yeah, which is an homage as a homage to Stagecoach. If you've ever seen that famous corridor crew, did a really good breakdown of this. They do great breakdown. They have their Stuntmen React series on YouTube, and they did a breakdown of how the stunt was done and everything, and showed how it's a reference to Stagecoach.
Yeah, definitely watch that video.
Yeah,
they're good.
Yeah, it's very cool.
I think it was Vic Armstrong is the stuntman's name who did a lot of. He did a lot of Harrison Ford stunts because he kind of has, it looks like Harrison Ford. But yeah, he did great work in this movie.
Vic Armstrong.
Yeah,
he's in a bunch of, he plays a bunch of the Nazis also. Or he stunts for a lot of the Nazis.
Yeah, he does a lot of stunts, so yeah.
And then everything, like, after they do get it back, and then, you know, them loading on the boat with the pirates, even though the pirates are only in a small scene, I really appreciate them too. Like, they're good.
Yeah, the captain, I forget his name, Kananga is good.
Yeah, I like Kananga.
Yeah, I guess he's really the only one, but yeah, I like him too.
Yeah, he doesn't betray Indy. He's like, yeah, we killed Indiana Jones. I get to keep the girl. And he's like, he's improvising. He does a good job.
Like, she's worth more to me selling her.
And the Nazis are racist. They're like, oh, what a savage. It's like, bro, you're a Nazi, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to murder millions of people in a few years. Like, right, this is upsetting you.
But I mean, it's in character for them.
It is. It really is. Everything with that is like, you know, and he tried to tell him, he's like, hey, why don't you hide? Like, again, they have places to hide, you know, because they're smugglers.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're like, they're caught off guard so quickly by how fast. But again, it makes sense. It's a U-boat. You're not going to see it coming until it rises up.
Yeah, exactly. And the way that they got that U-boat, because if you ever seen the movie Das Boot, or Das Boot, as it's probably known, they had this. They had the U-boat already built. So they're like, Spielberg was like, can we use it? And they said, sure, use this model. So it looks really good. It's like, for something that's only in the movie for 5 minutes, it's like, it's like an awesome mock-up to have.
Okay, that is cool. I mean, it also makes sense. Like, I mean, the German army was all over the place at this time in this, you know, in like Egypt and Africa area. So it makes sense that they just went somewhere and got on a U-boat and they're still hunting the Ark. Like, we don't get a time frame, but it could have been like a few days since the incident in where they're being chased.
I mean, yeah.
Because they probably didn't leave immediately. They probably were, you know, letting things cool down. And now they're getting out of there.
In my headcanon, it was like, Hitler was like very obsessed. So he used any resources he could for this mission. He was like,
yeah.
Instead of U-boat, give a flying wing, give, you know, do everything we can to get this
art. I mean, that is realistic to what happened, what he did. And, you know, he was obsessed with the cult.
Really obsessed with the cult.
So,
yeah.
I mean, all that's historical.
Yeah.
It works. And I appreciate that. And then I like how they're like, you know, we can't find him. Well, search again. And then you just see the guy's eyes go to the boat. I found him.
Yeah. And then the Raiders music plays really triumphantly. And then...
I am bummed that, because I was always wondering, like, did he go inside the U-boat and hide? Like, how did he get there? I got to find this deleted scene now, because I'm curious to see him, like, clinging. Because that makes sense.
He holds his breath really well.
I'm sure the thought process was the audience won't care.
Yeah.
I care, but.
And it's true, I don't.
Because the audience would forget about it in 5 minutes. Because they might have had the same problem, like, oh, George turns to Steve and says, wait a minute, the U-boat goes underwater. How does it happen? And he's like, no, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it, Steven.
Yeah, that's definitely, I feel like that's definitely what happened.
Yeah.
I mean, you could also believe that it stayed up.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they're not in danger, so why they don't need to go down and use more resources.
Yeah.
So I can believe that, too.
Because U-boats didn't always, you know, they weren't underwater most of the time, if I remember. Like, most of the time, they were on the surface.
It wasn't like submarines, like, as we think of in at the time, like, of this movie, like, the 80s and 90s and stuff like that.
Right.
You start getting, because we would have been already nuclear-powered subs at this point, right?
Right. Yeah.
What? Okay.
Oh, you mean in the 1980s? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. When this movie was made, yeah.
The idea of what we have, like, you know, I mean, how you know what the hell we have now, but yeah. We probably don't have submarines that have an AI mine inside of it, right?
I would hope not. I think you'd be amazed at how much current military technology is dated from 50 years ago.
No, I know.
with computers, you know, with some computers jankily installed in, but yeah. We still fly B-52s that were built in the 1960s, so.
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised.
They're built to last, Mike.
No, good point. Yeah, stuff was built to last back then, so.
Yeah. Sure.
Hey, just like Boeing plane, they're built to last too, right? From what I've been seeing.
Well, B-52s were built by Boeing, but it was a different
before
time.
Before then. Yeah, before they're like, we need to raise our profits. How do you do that? Well, let's just be cheaper.
Oh boy. Anyway.
You know what happens with me, Pete, every time. I gotta work in my world new stuff.
I know.
Even though this comes out a month later, but people.
By that point, Boeing may not exist by the time this comes out.
Yeah, who knows?
You never. I make a lot of jokes, and sometimes I make stuff that ends up coming true or comes relevant somehow. Like we did the Crow episode, and then like a couple days after we recorded it, they announced the new Crow movie. So hey, did the trailer for it.
Yeah.
The stuff with the base when they go to the island, I like that. I like how he just grabs a guy and he's putting on a coat, and the other guy comes up to him and he starts insulting them and he just beats him up real fast. Like all that's funny.
Yeah,
that was a real Nazi sub base too in France.
Oh. That's cool.
They didn't have to build the set. Didn't have to build a lot of the set. They didn't have to build the framework. So
that's really cool.
Yep.
That makes sense. I mean, I'm sure they had lots of bases, though, throughout that area back then.
Yeah. I mean, they built when they conquered France, they built that base there. So, yeah. And they after the war, I guess they preserved it for whatever reason. So
I think there's still all the turrets that they built up in.
Yep.
What country is that?
Normandy.
No, there's turrets in the northern part that were never used, so they were always afraid of an attack coming from the north.
Like Denmark or something?
Yes, and I think they're all still there. I would love to see those.
So yeah, I mean, that makes sense.
He was paranoid they were going to attack from the north, which they didn't do. But there's bunkers and all sorts of stuff that at the time that were built to protect them. I watched a lot of stuff. I love World War II stuff.
I'm sure.
But... And no, all that stuff is good. And the whole scene, like when he finally does get, when he gets the rocket launcher and he's like, I'm going to shoot the Ark if you don't give me the girl. And Belloc's smart enough to realize, no, you're not.
That line that Belloc has, though, you know, you and I are passing through history, but this is history.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. And it just, Indy lowers the launcher and proves that Belloc was right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They are just, they're similar.
Yeah.
Well, plus, it was his trump card, essentially. I mean, even if he shot the Ark, they would just have killed him afterwards anyway.
Yeah. So. Belloc called his bluff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really good.
And then that gets the ritual part.
Oh. First off, props to them for having, like, the right appearance for a ritual of that type. It's like Belloc's wearing proper attire.
You know, Belloc packed that away for this moment. He was like, he had a special suitcase just ready to go.
Yep. I knew my Freemasonry background would help me.
it's so good. Like, I was watching that scene today and I was just, you know, paying more attention to it and just the way they do it. And like, before everything goes to hell, like you start to see the electrical stuff start to mess up.
It's so creepy. Yeah. It's like so so eerie to begin with, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how upset they are, like with the sand. Oh, and another simple thing, like just movie being, you know, great movie in the ship, the Ark, the box the Ark is in gets burned when you see that rat because the Ark has power, and then you see that scene when they're putting in the U-boat, you see the same black mark on the crate, so you know it's the same item.
It burns the swastika off.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
Yeah,
yeah.
It has a swastika, and then. Because it, like, knows it's an evil symbol or whatever, presumably.
That's fucking cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. You made this movie even better.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not, you know, it's kind of subtle, but yeah, it is what happens. Yeah.
Ah, such a good film.
Yeah, and then, you know, things start coming and the ghosts start, spirits start coming out, and I like Belloc's reaction, like, it's beautiful. It's such a, it's like, oh boy, buddy.
And sure then is it's beautiful. Not.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm watching a movie and I go back, but I just saw something. When they do the fight of the plane, when he's fighting the first guy before the wrestler, mm-hmm. the wrench gets hit by the propeller and chopped up.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Good
foreshadowing.
There you go.
Intra. Yeah.
I just never caught that before. I'm just watching. I have it playing in the background. I'm like, oh, I had to mention.
Yeah, I don't think I ever clocked that. Yeah.
But to go back, yeah, what you're saying, Peter, about like the ghost stuff, it because again, it looks like a beautiful woman.
Yeah.
At first.
Right. Yeah.
Well, and that's a secretary from Lucasfilm.
Oh. Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah, they like brought like one of their like receptionists out and just like put her in the had her do it.
Yeah, do like the optical thing.
And then the others are
like,
all
did her face really turn into a skull then? Because if so, they need to lock that shit down.
After I saw this movie, I was always wondering if there was like anything in myth of the Ark of the Covenant having this kind of power. I always remember as a kid wondering about that.
I'm pretty sure it does not, like, your faces will melt. I don't think that's in there. It's probably more of like Ken said, symbol. You know.
Yeah, Ken said, like, there's lots of, like, random things it does, like killing people, but it never says, like, it melts your face off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, that's the effect of the melting face.
Oh, so good.
Like, so good.
Maybe one of the great villain deaths of all time. Yeah. These are, yeah. You know, it's so creepy. Like I was saying before, like, I can't believe this movie was rated PG. I mean, no, at the time there was no PG-13, but it's so intense for a PG movie. Yeah,
it definitely would have gotten a PG-13. It was originally going to get an R.
Right.
And they had to change some things to get it down to the PG.
Yeah. They had to change Belloc exploding. They had to like cover it up a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh man. I love it. When I was a kid,
all three of those are great.
Like one of them, you know, Nazi guy shrinks and Tote melts and Belloc.
Yeah. I love how the way Tote melts is just so amazing.
Yeah.
It's just such a cool effect. Like it doesn't look real. It just looks bizarre. And you love to see a Nazi die. So.
Right.
Couldn't happen to a better person.
Yeah.
I mean, because it was, you know, they built something and then they, you know, did like a time. They sped up the photography or whatever, you know. They sped up the camera, but it was done practically. And I think it makes it even more grotesque that it's like a real thing burning. Yeah.
Yeah. That was another one where they broke it down on Corridor Crew and like the big giveaway that it's in Fast Forward is the way his glasses fall.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause his glasses fall off his nose whenever his nose melts off, but they fall like way too fast because it's ramped up. But
so I have two questions in this. One, how did Indy know to close his eyes?
Because the Bible. Oh, okay. I'll say, because the Bible says, you know, to not look at the glory of God. And it talks about like when Lot and his wife were fleeing Sodom and Gomorrah and she looked back and turned into a pillar of salt because she looked back at God's glory while Lot knew to avert his eyes.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that is true. But there was a deleted scene when they were talking to the imam who told them who interpreted the hieroglyphics on the front of the headpiece.
Oh, okay.
He also told them, don't touch it, don't look at it.
I mean, that would make sense because they were using stakes to hold it up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're using wooden poles to do that. So
I feel like those are scenes that shouldn't have been deleted.
Yeah, like, I mean, maybe they didn't. Maybe for timing purposes, they wanted to cut it out or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've noticed a lot with movies where it's like, yeah, you need to cut this out so we can then have it play more in theaters and make more money. Right. Who cares if it doesn't make sense? Money! Justice League, I know that happened with where they cut out stuff. He's like, it's too long. It needs to be shorter so we get more viewings. Well,
I mean, they were right. It did need to be shorter. It needed to be shorter than it was.
I like the four-hour version, though.
Oh, I do, too.
I mean, I think it's marginally better, but it's
like still bloated.
It's a god-awful movie. It's like a slightly better version of a god-awful movie.
I have not seen either cut of Justice League, and I don't need to
see the theatrical version.
I make a day of it.
You really didn't miss much. There's some good. There's actually some pretty cool scenes in it, honestly, and they're in the original too. That was the thing.
Oh, and you are okay. I paid attention to glasses just now. Okay, that does drop super fucking fast. Like,
right?
Yeah, and they do the same speed ramping thing with the Nazi guy that dies at the end of Crusade. Also,
yeah, that's more of a digital one though. I think that's
that one's more digital. Yeah, but it still it gives it away. You can kind of see it just doesn't Doesn't look quite right. I mean, speed ramping, they don't do it as much in modern movies because people have kind of caught on to it more, I think.
Yeah.
But they used to do it a lot, especially like the James Bond movies.
Oh, God.
The fight scenes would always be so badly speed ramped because you can't get Sean Connery to actually like move. Sean Connery or what's his name?
Roger Moore.
Can't really get either one of them to really put any hustle into anything.
My other question is, what were they expecting was going to be in the box, the Nazis were, in this?
The Ten Commandments.
The Ten Commandments, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's what Belloc expected, is he thought he was going to see the actual tablets, the stone tablets.
But he wanted it more to commune with God.
Yeah.
Like, he said he thought it was more of a transmitter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's what he wanted to use it for. And there are stories in the Bible about, you know, the voice of God coming from the cherubim on the top of the ark and guiding, you know, voyages, setting up camps, where to sleep, blah, blah, blah. But, I don't know. That kind of bugs me because I don't really see what Belloc could have gotten out of it.
I mean, I think he just wanted, he's a discoverer, you know, like he's an adventurer. He's like Indiana Jones, just without the morality.
Yeah.
Like he wants to see it. He wants to be the first person in 3,000 years, 5,000 years to see the Ten Commandments, you know, tablets himself. And, you know, Hitler wants them because it's a weapon of mass destruction.
Yeah.
Or even if he doesn't believe in it, because it's a symbol.
Yeah. So he wants to be, I always heard like he wants to be Hitler to the punch. He's like, I get to see it before he does. So
right. That's why they opened it on the island.
Yeah.
To some extent.
And that's why, you know, maybe they could have taken it to Germany, but I don't think even if Indiana Jones wasn't there, I think Belloc would have always wanted to open it first. So
yeah. I mean, plus you wouldn't really want to like open it right in front of, you know, Hitler. Like for them it wouldn't make sense.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, so they they do commune with God.
They do.
God is very angry.
And proving once again that the phrase, my God is a vengeful God, isn't just talking shit.
Right. You know, all these, Indiana Jones is a very ecumenical series in that every religion is true. Or, you know, every God you believe in is true. Because Hindu gods are real. The Christian God is real. The Jewish God is real. Aliens are there somewhere.
Yep. Refrigerators are powerful.
Right, exactly.
Like it's so cool because all the good Indiana Jones movies are just adventure, 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 and then the last reel, okay, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And that's what's so fun about them.
Yeah. It's you know, I believe Spielberg wanted there were lots of movies about like Tomb Raider and stuff, but there wasn't ever anything where it was actually a supernatural object. But he was like, I want to make a movie where there is a supernatural thing, you know?
Yeah.
There's always like a tomb or something, but it's always just the riches that people get from it. But he's like, there actually has to be something in there.
I think that's one thing I love about this too. Same with like the first couple Uncharted games. Like I love that idea of mystical stuff being worked into a story.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too. I think that is part of the special, what makes it special compared to some of the movies that, you know, inspired it, like Treasure of the Sierra Madre and all right. that. Is it like with this, there actually is this like mystical thing and it's actually real. Magic is real, but it's not revealed to be real till the very end of the movie. Similar. Right. I mean, all three of these movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. We don't see like real magic till the end of the movie, but then it happens.
And I think that's good because the audience, you know, you might not believe it or it might get be like, oh, too hokey, but only at the very climax do you see it. And you're like, okay, you have time to digest it then. The danger is all from Nazis, really, for most of the movie.
Right.
Yeah.
Where,
yeah.
You know, comparatively, you know, the fourth movie in the cold open, so to speak, we have the dust, like the metallic dust, like floating,
right.
like in a way that's just not natural. And it's not something that would actually scientifically could happen. And then him surviving a nuclear blast inside a refrigerator is just too fantastical from the very beginning. You save that fantastic stuff for the very end.
Yeah.
And it makes for such a better... The whole rest of the movie, he's even very disdainful and dismissive of them in all three of the movies.
Right. Yeah.
He's disdainful and dismissive of the idea. Not as much in the second one, but in the first and the third one, he's very disdainful of the idea of the magic and of, you know, in the third movie, he's like, you know, he's laughing at the idea of X marking the spot on a treasure map when he's talking to the students, and then it does. And it's a similar idea, though, to me, is like you don't make it too silly until you save it for the end, and it doesn't feel silly. It feels like a payoff.
Right, exactly.
And God, do I love the ending of this movie when he brings the Ark back and then he's sitting with the people from the army. And they're like, we got, you know, our joke, the opening, we have top men working on it. Top.
Yeah.
And then it turns out it's just in a warehouse with 1,000 other crates just like it.
It's a very like down. It's almost a downer ending.
Yeah.
I guess I look at it in the terms of like this movie was conceived in like the 70s and a lot of 70s movies, the establishment wins.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's very much a time where the hero might even die in a movie, or the hero might survive, but in the end, the powers that be get whatever they want. And that's very much an ending of this movie.
Yeah.
But he got the girl.
He got the girl, yes. He didn't get the Ark. I mean, he gave the Ark to them, but they cataloged it and put it in a warehouse forever.
Yeah. But he got paid.
He did get paid.
Well, you think about it, then in the second movie, the Kali stones, except for one that the villagers need, go into the river to never be seen again, presumably.
Mm-hmm.
And in the third movie, Holy Grail falls down into a bottomless pit along with his Nazi girlfriend. He doesn't get either. He gets his dad in the third movie. He gets his dad back. That's the big win. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's the point. I mean, that's the point of his movies. Like, focus on the human things, let this artifact lie where it should in the depths of time or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah.
Stop focusing so much on the past and live your present.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, it's just an action-packed Lifetime movie. That's what I'm hearing.
Very good one.
Yes. I didn't really thought about that. Yeah, it is very much a downer. I mean, I don't think it was until I was older when I realized like what he meant by top men, like that he meant that he thought, you know, people were, you know, studying it that were very intelligent. Like, it was actually because of a Family Guy joke is when I finally got the joke.
Oh.
Family Guy, there was some, I know there's a couple, but there's one, I was trying to find it before this recording, because I'm pretty sure I didn't just make something in my head, but when I found, they're like, where's James Gunn? He's like, I have top men working with him, top men, and you see him in the crate.
Okay, yeah. Yes.
But I swear there was one on Steps, just like, you know, referencing this movie. Like, I swear I saw that in Family Guy, but I couldn't find it.
It's very possible. Yeah.
I didn't look that hard either.
Yeah, I remember a Family Guy joke where they did the top men at the end of the movie. I mean, in the episode, and it was from long before James Gunn would have been talked about. So I think they've repeated their joke. Ooh,
maybe it was James Woods.
James Woods.
Oh, James Woods. Yes, James it's Woods, James yeah. Woods episode. Okay, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
I'll say. Because I stopped watching Family Guy before when James Gunn was probably still like in college. So.
Yeah. So.
Yeah,
no, I think that's probably not true.
Family Guy probably be hard to go back to. I haven't watched it in years, and I think I want to keep it that way.
Yeah, I don't think it holds up very well in the modern light of day.
No.
But you know what movie does? This.
Yeah, it really does. There's nothing really problematic in this movie either.
Yeah, it still looks really good because they used all the miniatures or practical effects and all this stuff. It looks real.
You can tell it's up a time, but at the same time, it's also kind of timeless.
And also, because maybe it's set in the 30s, like it's not set in the 80s. So it's like.
Yeah, it's like a period piece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter. Yeah. That makes a big difference, I think.
Yeah. It moves quickly. It's less than 2 hours, if I'm not mistaken. It's like an hour and 50 minutes, which is mind boggling.
Yeah.
Like Dial Destiny is like 2 hours.
It's right under 2 hours. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Dial Destiny is like 2 hours and 40 minutes or something. You're like, come on.
That's ridiculous. That's so ridiculous.
Boy. I'm going to have to watch that now. I've been meaning to watch it and I've just been too lazy to.
I think it's fine, but. It's definitely of a modern era as opposed to this movie is a different era. And I think Indiana Jones belongs in the 80s, you know?
Yeah, I'm going to be totally honest. Oh, go ahead.
If they were going to make more, they waited, like with 4 and 5, they waited way too damn long.
Right.
Yeah. And that's why I'm upset that they exist, because it's like you had years of Harrison Ford could have made these movies and you're just like, nah, we don't want to. And then finally, we want to make
them. And he
Ford
really wanted
born
to.
Born in 1942. It's born in 1942.
That's crazy.
Oh.
It's ridiculous. Yeah, I was looking at the run times of the different movies. And so Raiders is right under 2 hours. And then Temple of Doom is a little shorter than that. And then Last Crusade is 2 hours and 7 minutes. Crystal Skull is 2 hours and 2 minutes. And then Dial of Destiny, 2 hours and 34 minutes. Like, that should be illegal.
It's way too long. It's like,
I say that my favorite Scorsese movie is The Irishman, which is 4 hours long, but still
That's different than an Indiana Jones movie, though. Like, it's Indiana very, Jones is a roller
it's a different
coaster.
Situation.
Right. I'm fine with
Irishman
that.
Is like, could easily have just been like a 4-episode miniseries, too. Yeah. I'll be honest, I haven't seen Dial of Destiny. After Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, I decided, you know what? There's 3 Indiana Jones movies for me. There could be 5 for other people. That's fine. There's 3 for me. And I just had no interest in seeing the new one. People kept asking me if I was going to go see it because, you know, some people know about my Last Crusade tattoo. I also have a big, like, theater size Last Crusade poster in my classroom behind my desk. So coworkers, students, oh, did you see Dial of Destiny? Like, no, I haven't seen it.
That is perfectly acceptable.
Yeah, it's like, it's fine. I'm not mad at the movie existing. I'm happy if people enjoy it, but I don't need it. I feel the same way about the Star Wars sequels.
Yeah.
You know, they're fine. Other people can watch them and enjoy them. I like, you know, well, no, really, I ended up liking them more when we did the podcast about them, except for the 3rd one.
Yeah, we did all walk away upset with that one.
Yeah, that one is somehow was worse, though, in the 2nd viewing.
I just think it's so funny how much we turned around on Last Jedi and then Rise of Skywalker. We did not turn around on.
J.J. Abrams, if you're listening, please adapt my book into a movie.
You know, your book would be a good
definitely.
Movie.
I would love to see your trilogy.
Actually, J.J. Abrams, you could produce it. Have Denis Villeneuve do the movie. Let's do that.
Ooh.
Let the Dune guy do it. Yeah.
That would be amazing.
Your book would work. I mean, I only read your first book, unfortunately, so far, just the first one. I need to buy the 2nd one. But it would have worked for sure as a movie. Like, it's very entertaining.
The whole trilogy would. I mean, it's such a good... I mean, I love the whole trilogy. It's awesome.
Thank you. I'll plug it later.
It's called Fish Civilization, which you will see the link in the show notes to it. Go check it out. I mean that. I really enjoyed that first book. I need to read more. I just don't read unless it has pictures in it. And usually it has to have superheroes of some sort. And your book didn't have that, sir. Pictures nor superheroes. So.
It's got bird people with transparent skulls.
It almost has superheroes. Look, it has
kangas that I thought looked like reptiles until we talked about it.
No, there's the guys from Warriors of Virtue. Yeah.
For some reason, until we talked about it, they were reptiles in my head, even though you describe it just fine, Peter. You describe them as like, but they were reptiles in my head for some reason.
Even though people called them kangas?
Yeah, they were reptiles. They were Krogans. Right.
The mind of Mike is just, you know, is a swirling mystery. The riddle wrapped in an enigma.
You're not wrong. The stuff that I've said on this podcast and the stuff.
Episode 1 is not the best Star Wars movie, Mike. Come on. That's
it's not. That's New Hope.
That's true. It's the 2nd best. What am I saying?
You know what? You're it is to me. With New Hope coming out in May, I'm actually tempted to take my son, but I'm like, he's not going to, like, I feel like he's going to be like, okay. Like, well, what, you know?
I don't know. I feel like there's something in the movie that can sweep people up.
Mm-hmm.
Same with not this.
New Hope, yes. But if I take it in episode 1.
No.
I don't know. My son likes all the Star Wars movies, and his favorite, he says, is episode 9. And that's fine. that's whatever.
Yeah, perfectly the world needs acceptable. Wrong people too.
Yeah, it's okay.
He's young. It's fine. He's like young. What you like. Yeah. Not like us that are sitting. That well, we got it in the end. We're so excited for more, and we're like, "What are you serving us, sir?"
You know, he's going to be on a podcast in 30 years talking about I don't know what's a movie he likes now.
Star Wars.
Puss in Boots, The Final Journey, or whatever that movie is, you know. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. The Harry Potter films.
Yeah, he's going to be on a podcast talking about The Order of the Phoenix and how great it is. So
it is a good movie. I still like those movies.
I do too. It's been a while since I've seen them.
We rewatched all of them because we went to the Wizarding World of Harry Potter back in December. Don't cancel me, guys. My in-laws paid for it.
You do not endorse every view of join of J.K. Rowling.
I don't endorse any of her views. Fuck her. But I still like
I mean,
her.
That
doesn't make the books bad. I just try not to send any money her way.
She's a bad person. But she still made good fiction.
Yeah.
She just turned out that she's nuts.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Why do people got to put opinion? Like, certain things just, like...
It's social media. Without social media, we never would have known.
You just keep things to yourself. That's all.
Yeah.
You know, if you got shitty opinions, just... Maybe not. If you're a celebrity of some sort, maybe not put them out on social media. You know,
yeah, I mean, it took people like 20 years to find out that Orson Scott Card is a fucking monster. You know, it's like it's social media. Without social media, you know, just no one gets to hear your stupid thoughts.
Right.
And the problem with the thing with social media is it makes you think that people care about your stupid thoughts. Like, we, you know, growing up in the 80s and 90s, we had all sorts of stupid thoughts, but we knew that nobody gave a shit about it.
No, we all had that one person on the block that wasn't really our friend, but they were the sounding board for all the stuff that we would tell our friends.
Yeah.
And their reaction was how we knew what was bad and what was good.
Yeah. Does Matt think that's funny? I better not tell that joke.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right, let's go to Shelf Stacker Box. And Peter, why don't you go first?
Keep it on the shelf. Watch it all the time. I love this movie. It's one of my favorite movies, definitely my top 10 of all time. I think it's a perfect movie, like Mike said, and it's a roller coaster. It gets me, I can watch these action scenes again and again and still feel enjoyment from them. So yeah, this is a terrific movie.
All right, I'll go next. This is also going on the shelf. I love this movie. Like I said, top of the show, perfect movie. I love this movie so much. I just watched it while we were talking again, most of it. Like, just, I never get tired of this movie. I never will. Going on the shelf. What about you, Ken?
Oh, absolutely, shelf. Everybody else saying it, I'm going to reiterate my previous statement also. It's a perfect movie. Honestly, like, the script is tight. The shooting is amazing. Editing is great. The music is great. There is everything about this movie is one of the best things that you'll ever see. If you haven't seen it, spend an hour and 55 minutes and just let it take you away. It's a great time.
And Carrie.
Man, fuck this. No, I'm just joking. I love this. It's on the shelf. Like, it's literally on the shelf 6 feet away from me. I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, absolutely. It's on the shelf. It's like you guys said, it's a perfect movie. It's not even my favorite Indiana Jones movie, and I still think it's a perfect movie. So, yeah, absolutely.
You got me very excited to revisit Last Crusade.
Yeah, that's one that I rewatch Last Crusade probably at least twice a year. I rewatch this one maybe once a year. I'll sometimes skip it in my not just because of time, not because it's not good. It's a perfect movie, like y'all said. There's nothing I would change about it. Not one second. And it's like this Spielberg. I mean, this and Jaws and Jurassic Park. It's like all three movies where there's not one single solitary second of that film that you would want to not have.
Oh yeah.
I should really watch Jaws someday.
Yeah, you really should. Oh god.
Yeah, so almost another one. I did not see Jaws until the pandemic.
Wow.
I saw Jaws 2 as a kid. I saw Jaws 3D, but I did not see Jaws until 3 years ago, and it is literally it is a perfect movie. Like, it is, I think it's one of the best movies that's ever been. It's not my favorite movie, but I think it's one of the best movies that's ever been made.
I agree.
Like, I'd say it's in the top 10 movies of all time. Not my top 10, but the top 10 best, highest quality films. It's so good. It's so good, and it really holds up. If you've never seen it, watching it right now, it's so good. You got to watch Jaws.
It's on my list.
We should do an episode on Jaws, guys.
That's the plan. And I want to make it so the first time I see it is when I record about it. And I got so much shit.
Good idea.
But yeah, I want to do it.
We'll get to it eventually.
Maybe I'll make a poll. I just use Patreon to make myself do things sometimes.
Before we end this episode, I would like to talk about the fact that this movie is in the Library of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're wondering if this is an important movie, yes, the government thinks that this is an important movie.
His jacket and hat from this movie are in the Smithsonian.
Yeah, it is frequently in the top movie lists that all those listicle websites do. And it's the only Indiana Jones that hasn't been nominated or has been nominated for an Oscar.
Mm-hmm. Because back then, the Oscars really liked to spurn.
Because I'm pretty sure that's, I'm pretty sure the other ones were nominated too. I think, for the Best Picture, you mean?
I mean for Best Picture. I'm sure they've gotten in there for sound and editing and so on.
And cinematography, stuff like that.
Yeah, this was nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah.
I think
Chariots of Fire back when the Oscars had fun.
Chariots of Fire 1, which is a movie no one remembers except for one scene these days, so.
Yeah.
What movie?
That song.
Chariots of Fire. It's about.
I've never even heard of it.
See, that's. Clearly, they made the mistake of picking that over Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Well, Green Book won Best Picture, too, so.
Right, yeah.
I don't know what that is, either.
It's Chariots of Fire is about the 1924 Olympics.
Yep,
and a lot of running. It has a famous scene where people are running on the beach, and there's music, very famous music to that. Da, 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 right. Da, 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 da. Yeah.
Okay. Rocky 3 had a better running on the beach scene.
Rocky 3 is a good movie.
Legitimately, I'm a big Rocky fan. Rocky 3 is not my favorite, but it is good.
I've only seen 1 through 5, and I think I saw Rocky once.
Right.
But
so here's what I think all 6 of the Rocky movies, and also Creed, are fun movies. I think Rocky 1 and 2 are incredible movies. And then 3, 4, and 5 are dumb fun. 6 is a good, you know, reunion. And then Creed is a great movie. It's its own thing, you know.
There's a couple of Creed movies, right?
There's like 3, I think. I've only seen the first one so far. Wow. I've only seen the first one so far, but the first one's really good.
I never saw him. I wanted to. I just never got around to it.
My favorite thing in Creed is when they've got his gloves on and he's like, hold on, I gotta take off my gloves. Gotta take my gloves. Like, what are you doing? He's like, I gotta take shit. Are one of y'all gonna wipe my ass? And they're like, all right, get his gloves off.
Sorry.
I'm like, that's realistic.
Peter, where can people find you at?
You can find my book, The Fifth Civilization, the first book in my trilogy. It's available from Amazon right now. It's available in Kindle or physical form.
All right, and Carrie, where can people find you at?
Hey, I'm Carusetta, K-E-R-O-O-S-E-T-A, on Twitch and YouTube and the Game Someone Found Discord. I modify and repair video game consoles. I've actually gotten back into that, and I've been doing a lot of mods lately. Just did a GameCube Pico Boot mod. Very simple mod, costs about $25-$30 that'll let you play games off the SD card on a GameCube. Been doing that kind of stuff a lot, but also just stream whatever I happen to be playing on my PS5 a lot of the time too.
Is it still Dark Souls?
You know, there's a lot of Prince of Persia. I streamed most of me. I streamed a lot of me beating Cyberpunk recently and playing the new Prince of Persia a lot on there too. But now I just started Final Fantasy VII Remake and streaming that. So, but mostly, yeah, you know, just whenever I happen to be playing, or also a lot of the time when my son and I play Apex, I'll stream that too. So kind of a lot of everything. But trying to get more back into the modding and repairing thing. So I've been doing more of that. Got my kind of getting my workshop back in order. So.
And did your son get back into making those shorts?
Yeah, he's back in action. He's got over 600 followers on YouTube now. He is a Natropy Dragon, NATROPY_dragon. He does these really impressive to me. Obviously I'm his dad, but he does these really impressive dragon puppets on there. And he's part of this like community of people that do dragon puppets. And he's been doing a lot. So yeah, he's got over 600 followers on. He's got 6 times as many followers on YouTube as I do, which is great. Good for him. Maybe he can pay for college with that. So go follow him so he can pay for college with his YouTubing.
I do know a few people that have gotten famous off TikTok, actually. One we both know, Gary Cody.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Cody's a character, so
he was going to be famous for something eventually.
I don't mess with TikTok enough. And if you enjoyed this episode, there's over 600 other episodes of this podcast. You can find everything we do on Podbean. We've done tons of Star Wars stuff. We've done Resident Evil games, Silent Hill, just because I want to mention those. So just go check out our giant catalog. And we have hit 100 movies. And I want to thank everyone for listening all this time. We've been doing all these film episodes, so thank you. And if you want to support the show, we do it. Patreon, a little dog, vote in our Patreon poll. You will see a link in the show notes. So please do join us. And you can vote in polls. I have polls 1 to 2 every month. And we have a Discord. Please join our Discord. You see a link in the show notes. We're always happy to have new people join. So chat with us. You don't have to just join. It's free. And you can talk with us. So, and you can also suggest things that I will eventually possibly get to, I tell myself. So there's that. I want to give a shout out to my awesome intro and outro courtesy of Helena at Hellhast Freak. Follow her on TikTok, Twitch, Instagram. You'll see a link to her link tree in the show notes. Also, we have a shout out to Bill Tucker, who has his own podcast, Gamer Looks at 40. He's currently going through the Final Fantasy stuff. So if you go check him out, great show. And check out Nintendo Main Podcast and Nomads of Fantasy. And please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Threads, Blue Sky, TikTok, YouTube, audio only, but you can find us all on there. And please review us wherever you get your podcasts. It helps a lot. And I think that's everything I need to say. So we will see you guys all next time. Bye, everybody.
Later.
So long.